Hello, friends. Welcome back to the What If Project podcast. My name is Glenn, and this is episode 288 of the show. We are continuing our series of conversations revolving around the topic of grief. Most of you know that my father passed away last March 2023. And so this month, I haven't really been ready to talk about grief. Like on the podcast, touch on it here and there, but no real conversations like revolving around the topic, kind of going into it. And so I felt like this month, I really wanted to, I'm not doing any recording this month, so all these episodes have been recorded for a little bit, but I'm not doing any recordings. I wanted to set aside time to be with myself and with my feelings, with my emotions, with all the different things. And I felt like I really wanted this month of episodes to be dedicated to talking about grief. Because we don't do a good job of it in our society, but also like in the church. And I talk a lot about in these episodes, I mention stories of my church experience where really I've been conditioned to just push my feelings away in order to elevate everybody else's feelings, but also to kind of put on almost like this fake smile, this like toxic positivity of like, hey, everything's going to be great because God is good all the time and all the time God is good. And one day we're going to get to heaven, the tears will be wiped away and everything's going to be good. So put on a smile now, push through, save souls, get to heaven, life is good. Like that was my mentality for the longest time. And so I'd have some epic, horrible thing happen in my life that really would require me be calling the tears from my body, and I would just shove them down, shove all the grief down and put on a smile and push through. Like I would shed some tears here and there, but there was no like season of grief. And I felt like when my father died, I'm like, I don't know how to grieve. I don't know what this looks like. I don't know what to do with these feelings. And so I really spent this last year just kind of being with myself. I mean, I shut down the podcast for a while and then I picked it back up, and I still have been navigating through those feelings and through all these emotions and what to do. And so anyway, I wanted to do a series of conversations where I bring people on who have experienced grief, who have experience with the dying, with the dead, and ask them some questions about life, death, grief, and all the things. And so first episode in this mini series type thing was with Rob Bell. And Rob wrote his amazing book, this amazing new novel. But he also lost his father in 2023. And so we talked about loss and grief and losing a parent. Then we had Elaine Pagels on. And Elaine wrote a book called Why Religion, where she talks about how she lost her son, who was six. He had a very rare illness, and he died. And then a year later, her husband died, tragically. And so she talked to us about grief and loss and kind of holding on to your faith in the midst of it and allowing your faith to evolve as you grow and as you grieve. And then today we're talking to Jonathan Foster. Jonathan wrote a book called Indigo. Subtitle is The Color of Grief. Jonathan lost his teenage daughter in a tragic car accident. I believe it was on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, I forget. But he lost his daughter in a car accident. And this book is really just, it's a book of, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like a poetic book that's detailing feelings about grief, thoughts about grief, putting words on questions we have about grief. It is an amazingly done book. And I told him, we've been trying to record this episode for a long time, and I put it off like 80 times because I was like, I can't even open this book without crying. I can't have a conversation about it for sure. But I finally made my way through like half to three quarters of it. And I was like, all right, we can have a conversation about this. It is such a good book. And it really has been a companion for me on this journey of grief that I'm on. And so anyway, today we're talking to Jonathan. Next week, we're going to talk to Perdita Finn, who talks to us about grief and loss and also communicating with our ancestors. Because when my father died, I was like, this can't be it, right? Like, I'm not done. I have more things to say. My father has more things to say to me. I never forget, like, being in the hospital room. And I'll talk about this more next week, but being in the hospital room, holding his hand as he's taking his last breaths, I'm like, this can't possibly be it. Like, I still need to hear from my dad. And Perdita has helped me. This book has also been a companion for me. I've read it twice. Her book has really helped me realize that my father's still here, still talking, every day, all day, longing to help me, longing to guide me, right here by my side. And so her book, Take Back the Magic, we'll talk about that next week. Huge, huge help. So anyway, I'm hoping these conversations are helpful for people, because I have a lot of people reaching out to me saying, like, I don't know how to grieve either. But, like, thank you for not being afraid to talk about it, right? Because we live in this world where, like, tears are bad, sadness is bad, and so push it all away and put on the happy face, right? So people are saying, like, I don't know how to grieve either, but these conversations, this you talking about it is helpful. And so I'm hoping this is helpful for people, because I'm doing this primarily for me. I have these questions. I'm navigating through this, and so I'm asking these people these questions for me. Help me navigate through all this stuff. But I'm also inviting you all along for the ride. So if you have these questions as well, you're more than welcome to jump into the lifeboat and take some time to be here with me and with our guests. So anyway, Jonathan Foster, Indigo, The Color of Grief, pick it up. It's a really, really good book. I'll put the link in the show notes. Also in the show notes, links to my books, Rethinking Everything, Emerging from the Rubble, links to Patreon if you want to support the show financially. Again, entrance into a Discord chat group as a small, quote, reward. Those links are also in the show notes. Anywhere from $3 a month up to $100 a month, whatever tier you might like to create, all the options are there. So anyway, links are in the show notes. This is episode 288, Indigo, The Color of Grief, with Jonathan Foster. Enjoy. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are joined by repeat guest, my friend and yours, Jonathan Foster. He's written a beautiful book called Indigo, The Color of Grief, that we're going to dive into today and see, as we said before, where the good spirit leads us. So, Jonathan, welcome back to the podcast, and thanks for making time for us.
Oh, man, thank you for having me and having me back. Repeat offender, you are courageous.
Didn't scare you away the first time.
or the other way around.
Or the other way around. Exactly.
That's right. No, man, kindred spirit. And I appreciate the opportunity to hang out with you.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to give our listeners a, I guess, like a behind the scenes footage of our conversation. Mm-hmm. And maybe even that's a good place for us to begin talking, because we've literally been trying to plan this for maybe 6 months, and I've postponed it what feels like 82 times. Not, of course, because I didn't want to talk to you, but because the topic of our conversation is obviously a heavy one for me in this season that I'm in, you know, coming to grips with the loss of my father. So for our listeners, this book, it's a beautiful book. Like I said, it's a collection of these poetic thoughts about loss and grief. And I honestly had trouble making it through like even a page without tears, you know, running down my face. And so I kept putting it away and emailing you to let you know that, like, I just wasn't in a place to have a conversation about any of this stuff. But so what I want to say is thank you. You know, I said this before we hit record, but I want to say it publicly. Thank you for being gracious to me, because some people I found in grief, and maybe you found this as well, like, some people just don't understand that sometimes there's like a dark cloud that's waiting
by the bed in the morning when you wake up, and it sort of like follows you around all day, kind of disrupting your plans, making it difficult to do anything at all. Like one day the cloud is there or not there, the next day it's there and it demands like all of your attention. So thank you for understanding. Thank you for being flexible with me. And thank you for helping put words on my grief through this book.
Oh, well, thank you for all that. And you don't have to, you don't have to worry about that all in terms of us. And I just think it's a good reminder for everyone. And even people who haven't read the book yet, I've recognized that a lot of people just aren't even ready to dive into it. Even some of my friends, you know, so but I get it because it deals with so many really challenging things. And so, it's all good. We're all trying, basically, I think we're trying to do the best that we
That's
can. I
right.
posted something the other day about that. I was like, I think that that's true, except there's a few people I'm not so sure they're trying to do the best they can. So when I think about those people, I just remind myself, I want to be the kind of person, at least, who thinks that,
Right.
which then cycles me back to the top. It's almost the same effect anyhow. So anyhow, all that to say, yeah, I think we're all just doing the best we can, and I appreciate your honesty, and glad we're talking about it now.
Yeah, thank you. To start us off, like I don't really have much of a plan for this. Like usually when I do a podcast, like I read the book and I think I want to ask this. But it felt like this book was almost and the story behind it was almost like it feels like it's too holy, I guess you could say, in a way, like to have a list of questions. Like it feels like it's just the best thing to do is just to start with like tell us maybe the story behind this book, because obviously there's a huge foundation at the bottom of this book, something that really propelled you into this season of grief. So I was wondering if you're comfortable, if you could take us into kind of the story surrounding this book, how it came to be, and then we'll just see where we go from there.
Sure, of course. The book is me unpacking, initially the loss of my daughter, which happened New Year's Day 2015. And it happened in a car wreck. So it happened suddenly. And my partner and I have talked a lot over the years about, the different ways that people enter into these things. And sometimes you have long illnesses, and that has its own trauma. I don't know that one is worse than the other, but it was traumatizing. Yeah, in the span of a heartbeat to lose this 20-year-old kid. She was a junior in college. And so, yeah, that was a little bit over 9 years ago. And basically, for 9 years, I've been trying to unpack that. Now, there was a bunch of stuff before all that happened, too. We've been walking through subtraction for a lot of years in a lot of different ways. And in some ways, if I could say it this way, I'm not grateful for the specific incidences that have happened, incidents. But I'm thankful for the depth of, I'd like to think, the depth of character that was starting to be built before 2015 hit, because it helped me, begin to process it. But so the book is kind of like, initially, it's about that pain, but also it starts to it starts to peel that back and talk a bit about beauty and art and loss and life and love and who God might be and who I thought that I was and who I'm becoming. So it's an identity thing, which is a big part of grief, as you probably have wrestled with as well. I don't know if you've thought of that word specifically, but like, who am I now that this kid is gone? I identify, I loved being a dad so much, and I still am. I got two boys, so I'm thankful for that, but I loved being her dad so much. So it's also at deeper levels, like an identity piece. And yeah, it's just trying to enter into the grief in a honest way without offering up solutions. I started to say too quickly, but maybe without offering any solutions at all, except for love. And but also be honest about that maybe there is hope too. So it's it's an interest. It's been an interesting project.
Yeah, I love what you said about, like you walked through a season of subtraction. before this huge subtraction happened in your life. And I feel like in a much smaller way, like I'm looking at my daughter, she's six. And when my father passed away in March, that was her grandfather, obviously. And that was her first real significant loss. But before that, like literally 2 months before, our dog passed away, which was also a significant loss for her. And that just like wrecked her completely. And when she was younger, like she doesn't really remember as much, but we had two cats and they passed away. But the dog was big because that was literally just a couple months before my dad. And what I found was really interesting with her is that we tried our best to help her process the loss of this dog, because she went to school, the dog was very sick, and while she was there, we had to put the dog to sleep, and she came home, the dog wasn't there. And so we had just a lot of conversations about like, where is her name was Snuffy. So where is Snuffy now? Is Snuffy in heaven? Like, where is heaven? Well, Snuffy's, I'm never going to see Snuffy again. So we just had all these conversations about like, like I was telling her about like the Gospel of Thomas and how Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is all around us and within us. And I said, maybe that means that Snuffy lives inside of us in our memories. Maybe Snuffy's all around us. And so we had like these conversations about like, where do you think Snuffy is? What do you think is going on? What I found interesting is that when my father passed away, I thought it was gonna we were gonna go right back there and her be completely wrecked again. But what was interesting is she was using a lot of the same language that we gave her for Snuffy, when it came to my dad. And I could almost see her processing what was going this huge subtraction in her life regarding my dad, using a lot of that language and terminology we gave her for the dog. And then she was using that to encourage me because I was the one who was obviously wrecked. And she was this like pillar of strength. I mean, obviously she was sad. She was crying, but like she came to me so many times and said, "Daddy, I can't imagine how you must feel losing your daddy. And I just want you to know that, grandpa's all around us and grandpa's inside of us." And like she was just
That's
using a
great.
lot of that same language. So I thought it was interesting just when you said that that season of subtraction almost prepared you for that moment of subtraction that you had in your life.
That's a really great story of, yeah, you helping your kid and then them helping you, but also, right, the potential reality. I mean, none of us knows exactly for sure, but the potential reality and the longing we have in our heart, for how to process these things and where our loved ones might be and are. And I say potential reality, I mean, there's when you begin to unpack the depth of love, which I do, especially as I get to the end of the book, it's not unreasonable. I mean, love is never reasonable, but it's not unreasonable to be thinking in terms of God as the soul of the universe, to borrow a John Wesley phrase. And all of these happening, all these things happening, subtractions and additions and good and bad, and all of this is happening within the body of God. And if that's true, by faith, I think that God is able to remember, remember, like we've been dismembered, we've lost a loved one, but in God, maybe they're remembered. And so in our minds, they're being remembered. But also neurologically, things are happening. Like I'm a different person now, in very powerful ways post the death of my kid. Like in some ways, she shaped me more, if I could say. I mean, she shaped me just as powerfully in a different way than she did when she was alive, which is wild. And so the idea of who she was and the way she was got down into my neurons and into my body. And now I've it out. I think something like that is happening with God. All of this loss in life is being embodied within God, and new things are coming out of it. And so, yeah, what you and your daughter are talking about are, it's possible that's the real reality.
Now you talk a lot about, obviously you talk a lot about God in your book, and you're actively writing a lot of stuff. I follow you online and stuff, and you're always writing about God. One of the questions I did want to ask you is, like, after this huge loss that you had in your life, like, why are you still a person of faith? And I just talked to Elaine Pagels a couple of days ago because I'm doing these string of conversations about grief. And I asked her the same question because she lost her 6-year-old son. And then a year later, she lost her husband who was hiking and he fell off of a cliff, like, and dropped 1,000 feet. And her whole life was just turned upside down. And so, you know, my same question for you is, like, in the midst of, like, unimaginable loss, why do you still have faith in the divine? Like, was there any kind of wrestling? Did you ever come to a moment, like, in the aftermath of this loss where you're like, you know what, like, I think this might be it for me and God? Like, you know, did that, like, ever come up for you? Like, did you ever wrestle like that? Like, what does all that look like for you?
Yes and no. It's a bit complicated,
Of
as you
course it
know.
is.
I would, yeah. I guess so. For me, I never really entertained the idea that I never really had the thought that there was no God necessarily. And I don't know why, because I wouldn't blame anyone for thinking that. I will say, before I forget, that I definitely have turned atheistic towards certain types of gods, you know, the God that I grew up with, which is, it's complicated, because even there, I think love was present in those really confined evangelical spaces. And little by little, that was already being disassembled anyhow. Well, when my kid died, that all just, like, you know, high octane fuel, it just blew up. And so I was definitely no longer a fan of that God, and not even interested in that God, you know, a God that would will such a thing, or that would even permit such a thing. Because, you know, any number of reasons that get handed to us, you know, like, there's some other good is going to happen because that, I mean, all of that's just kind of absurd and
When
didn't
you get to
make.
heaven, it will all make sense.
Exactly. You know, everything happens for a reason, and it turns God into this mechanistic, like, omnipotent, outside of time and space deity who's pulling levers and pushing buttons and running the code. And it's really just kind of gross. And so I definitely, this certainly helped me do away with that kind of God. And frankly, I'm in a weird kind of liminal maybe space, where I've got one foot into a lot of Christian circles and one foot out, but my one foot in keeps me in conversation with a lot of people about it. And it still troubles a lot of people. I mean, I'm still trying to be patient and help them see, no, there's maybe something deeper and more expansive here. So I will say, you know, that has happened. But also, for me, a very key element of the story on New Year's Day 2015 was all wrapped up in some kind of, like, mystical, weird, odd experience that I had. Like, that morning, I was reading Elie Wiesel's book called Night. And maybe listeners know about Elie Wiesel, but he was a Holocaust survivor and wrote a series of books. But his most well-known book is called Night. He's won a Pulitzer Prize for it, well deserved. It's a beautiful, stunning, terrible, sickening book. And so I was reading that morning about, this would be the morning of the day that she died, about a story that takes place. And I relay some of that in Indigo, but where he and other prisoners were forced to walk underneath three boys that were being hung by the Nazis. Like, it's just this absurd, ridiculous thing that they were forced to do. And as he's walking underneath, he hears a voice saying, "Where is God?" And then the response is, "Where is God? He's hanging on the gallows with those boys." And when I read that, New Year's Day morning, I was up early reading and meditating. Everyone else was asleep, and I remember closing the book thinking, this is absurd. I mean, this is just, what in the hell is this? This, you know. And that thought kind of stuck with me all day, that call and response, where is God? He's hanging there on the gallows. And yeah, so later that night, fast forwarding, after we had heard the news about our daughter. And then I was packing the car up because we were at my mother-in-law's home, and so we were going to head back up to Kansas City where we live. And I heard that same call and response, "Where is God?" But this time I heard, "Where was God?" He was in the car dying with Quincy, which is my daughter's name. So from the very first moments, the idea of God being wrapped up and interconnected and entangled with all of this was very, very much a part of my personal experience. I say in the book, and I think it's the honest thing to say, did I think that, did I have that call and response happen because Elie Wiesel's book prompted me, to do it? And so my brain was still thinking about it. I mean, it's possible. Like, did that get planted in my head and then just get triggered? Or even more, did I think something about God because my entire life has been intervolved with God? Yeah, it's really possible. And it's also possible that it was an expression of love at some really deep level. And so God as love has been the thing that I've been interested in. I'm happy to give up all the other things about God that I was taught, by the way, by well-intentioned people for the most part. And so I've spent a lot of my work over the last 9 years has been redefining what love is. So now when I think of love, I think of not, I mean, I don't think of these things. I've programmed basically my brain to go non-binary, non-violent, non-scapegoating energy in relationship with everything. Well, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I talked about God as love, that's not where my brain went. I mean, it went through some weird labyrinth of like wrath, fiery, scapegoating hell kind of thing. Now I've, thank God, thank love, I've worked through all that. And so to your question, did I ever think about, yeah, I've given up notions of God, but I keep falling inward. I feel like this fractal kaleidoscopic falling inward into love. And if God is love, I'm cool with that piece of it.
I was thinking while you're talking about, that I think it's important for people to realize that there's a difference between giving up on God and giving up on what you might have been taught about God that no longer fits in the context of your experience, right? Because like for me, in seminary, you learn systematic theology, you learn about the omnipotence of God, the omnipresence of God, all these different characteristics of God, and you rattle them off and you have a slew of verses that backs them up. And then, you write the paper or you take the exam and you get the A and you B or whatever it is, and you move on,
I got
but
a C
then
or a D, probably.
yeah, exactly, whatever it is. And then, but then you get out into these experiences and you're like, wait a minute, like this doesn't make sense. And for me, like the biggest moment for that was back when my wife and I, we had a miscarriage, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I was in that headspace of God is all powerful, so God is in complete control. And I remember like when I went out to get the car to pull it around to pick up my wife, I was literally screaming at this God, and saying, how dare you do this? Like, how could you do this? We've been looking forward to this. No, this is our baby, and I've done everything for you. Like, what else do you want me to do with my life? Like, I've gone to Bible college, I've gone to seminary, I've dedicated my whole life to doing all the things. I've checked all the marks, and like, this is what you do, and this is what you plan, and this is what you let happen. I was like so angry. And then I realized, like, I held on to that for a while, and I had a lot of people say, well, you just got to have faith, like we said before, and one day you get to heaven and it all makes sense, and God needed another angel in heaven. I heard those kind of things from people, and so I tried to just hold on for a while to my faith, like I just white knuckle it, like it's, this is the way it is, and it just is what it is. But I got to the point where that didn't make any sense anymore. Then I came across, Thomas Ord, and I came across you, and I came across a lot of people in that open and relational theology kind of world. And I started to realize that, oh, like I can let go of that God, but not let go of God. And
Yeah.
when my father passed away, had he passed away way back then, I think it would have just blown everything up, because I don't think I would have been, I don't know how I would have come to grips
Right.
with that had I still believed in that God. But now I realize that, like you said, where is God? Like, I felt like God is so connected to me and my dad and my mom, who was there in the hospital room as well, that like God was with us with our hands over my father's body as he was taking his last breaths. But he was also in the bed with my father as he was taking his last breaths. He was weeping with us. He was taking his last breaths with my dad, or, and I felt like that just, for whatever reason, that just brought me a lot of comfort, because I felt like that's what love is. Like, that's, God is so connected to us, whether you want to call God he, she, spirit, whatever. Like, God is so connected with us that that's where God was in that moment. And that brought me immense comfort to know that God might not be in control of all the things, but God is with us in all of the things. And that's what love really is.
Yeah, I think so. It like makes me think of, I mean, the Christian basically idea is omnipresence. Now, I'm not so down with omnipotence, as you've already said. And I know you're a Tom fan. I love his omnipotence, his love-powered stuff. I'm not so much down with omniscience unless I get to kind of redefine it. But I've continued to be down with omnipresence. And most Christians, yeah, in fact, all Christians would say that too. And it's interesting. So if you begin to parse that out and to think about it, if that's true, there is no God-forsaken space anywhere in the cosmos, both physiologically and metaphysically and emotionally and psychospiritually. And so, yeah, the divine entanglement, as Elia de Leo calls it. So that's helped me a lot too. There's that embedded presence of love that is with us. And well, the other thing I'll just say is what I heard you say, I totally relate to it as well. We went through these successions of losses, these subtractions that, by the way, were highlighted, were even more intense because, and you started to get to this, because we live in a very addition obsessed world, and our religious world is maybe the most addition obsessed. And so we go off to Bible colleges and seminaries because we have good intentions and good hearts, and we're like, we want to grow and we want to love God and we want to bring others and we want to grow churches, and it's grow, 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 addition, addition. But especially in our American exceptionalism culture, by the way, there's good things about America. It's not all terrible, but especially in our American exceptionalism culture, the addition piece gets highlighted, and it's pretty easy to get into it and really be doing stuff that has nothing to do with Jesus. Jesus was really oriented around subtraction stuff. So I think that's interesting. But yeah, if the sequence of things and the deaths that we went through had happened in a different order, and this had been my kid 10, 20 years ago, there's no chance. There's no chance I would have been a Christian. It just couldn't have happened. And by the way, that doesn't mean you have to be a Christian. I don't even care about that. It's just interesting the way it was sequenced, the way it unfolded, I think is a better word, in my life. And so when that time came, and subsequent things even since then that have happened, I've just kind of, yeah, thought about God is just constantly with us. And even when I'm not sure I'm with him, I think he or she is always with us. Something like that, anyhow.
Something like that. Something like that. So think about like how your approach to, or your thinking about God kind of evolved. I'm wondering, after the loss of your daughter, like, did your approach to grief evolve at all or change at all? Because like I've been thinking a lot about this with over the last year, and maybe this will ring a bell with you, but I realized that like when my father passed away, my initial thought was, I was driving home like literally 40 minutes after it happened, and I was like, I don't know how to grieve. I don't really feel like I know how to grieve right. And if there is a right, I don't know what to do with these feelings, you know, because again, like I grew up in that, you know, Bible college, seminary, pastor, everybody else goes before you know, and you have to be there for everybody else. And so I just learned to squash my feelings down. And I talked to this with Elaine the other day. I said to her, you know, I was even thinking about, like, I worked at Apple for 11 years and in a retail store. And I've gone through, you know, we had our miscarriage and I was there and some other losses as well. And you get time off, but, you know, you have like it's a week maybe, but then you come back to work, you know, and you have to go out on the floor and your smile sells the computer, you know, so you've got to be present. You've got to be engaging. Like, you've got to learn to push your feelings aside. And so I felt like I was really good at that because I learned to do that in the church. And so I felt like I was really good to do that there. And so I did that there. But I just realized driving home, like all my life, I've been conditioned to push these feelings away, but I can feel them right now bubbling beneath the surface. And I have a decision to make. Like, I have a whole bunch of podcasts lined up, you know, for the summer. I've got all the stuff I've got planned to do. I can throw myself into all that stuff and do all the things and make my way through the to-do list and squash those feelings down because I'm really good at doing it. Or I can clear that part of my calendar and I can make space for this door to open and just have to be ready for whatever's going to happen. And so for me, like, I decided that's what I was going to do. That's what I did. And I had all these feelings come up that I didn't know what to do with. But, you know, I realized that had this happened again 10, 15 years ago, it would have been a very different scenario for me and how I handled it. So I'm wondering, you know, with the loss of your daughter, did your approach to grief evolve or change at all, or was it pretty consistent based upon how you had approached grief in the past with those other subtractions in your life?
I mean, there was definitely some common denominators. Earlier in our life, we went through a 3-year stretch where my sister unfortunately was murdered and our house burned down, and then my best friend from college died. Those happened bam, 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 1 year after the other. And I just remember, and I was on staff at a growing, church plant in a suburban growing area out in Phoenix, Scottsdale, Arizona, and everything was fast-paced and moving, and I just felt like I was in a fog. I got some support from friends, but the religious system in general did not support that. And so there were certainly common denominators to those kinds of things. So I was on friendly terms with this fog feeling, with this like just being feeling untethered, like my sense of gravity had shifted. It was around these certain people, and then those people are gone, and all of a sudden, the larger things that the gravitational force is pulling, they're in other places. So I was friendly with that, but then also, no, of course, because of life and the way things change and everything is changing, everything's in flux. Nothing is ever really stable, which is, I think, half of our problem with any of our religious traditions. We finally nail it down, pun probably intended. We finally nail it down, but then, things change because we change, our bodies change, our minds, our hearts, the world around us changes. So it is interesting, isn't it? It's like being in this constant field, magnetic field, where you're trying to figure out where gravity goes. Like, love feels like a gravitational field, and when the other person's not there, the ache, the love has nowhere to go necessarily. It just goes out everywhere. That's like the reverse, whatever's happening with magnets and reverse polarity. There's nothing being reversed. It's not being returned. And it's a haunting, really weird existential feeling that's constantly changing and feeling different. And you go through ups and downs, you go through good things in life, and it's really true. Like, there are some really beautiful things, but also the presence of all this subtraction is never is never removed from me. And that was really kind of that's another way to explain why the book Indigo came about, is because I kept wrestling with how weird it was that I had an absence, but that the absence had become a type of presence. And that, there was no energy there, but it was completely energizing me. There was no form, but it was forming me. And so artistically, that's what really generated the whole rest of the book. But sorry, I'm rambling. Your question was, has it changed? Yeah, it's constantly changing, and it's constantly different every day. And I just sounds like I'm trying to do what you're doing. I'm trying to bring myself into the presence of the thing. And I think it's really honorable work. And by the way, for anyone listening, you may not have lost a kid or your parent, but all of us have gone through loss, loss of the way we thought life was going to go, which in some ways is what all of this is about. The loss of a marriage, the loss of a dream. And I think it's really honorable work to bring yourself to be present to all of it. I do recognize, I'll just say this one last thing before we go on to whatever else we want to talk about. I do recognize that it's really scary for some folks. And I think maybe more for some of us who are more masculine than the feminine parts of us, because we've been conditioned to think, to not want to identify with a subtraction. Again, it's an addition-obsessed society. And I can't blame it all on my society. I like addition. I would have loved for life to have gone that way. But it's really scary. And that's why, people who are present to their loss are some of the most courageous people that we have in the world. And it's all upside down, because it's not what's esteemed in the world. It's not what's esteemed in the church world, really, in many cases, not all cases, but in many. But I think you're doing really honorable work to try to stay present to it.
Love what you said about, forget exactly how you worded it, but the gist of the idea was that, this grief, this thing called grief, kind of moves along with us. Like, it's not like we leave it happen back there and then we move on. Now we're adding more things to our life, but that grief comes with us. And we were talking about Rob Bell before, but there's a line in his new book, and I forget, I think it's one of the characters, Heen, and he says something along the lines of, like, this ache of grief has always been with me, kind of thing. And what I thought, what that made me think of, what you just made me think of, is that I've had so many people say, like, again, trying to be helpful, there's gonna come a time where you're gonna kind of get over it, kind of thing, and like you're gonna move on, and you're gonna move on from this time, and you're gonna, go on and do other things, and this too shall pass, I've heard people say, and things like that. But now I'm in this place, I'm like, no, like, I just don't feel like this is something that's gonna get left behind in 2023 as I move on with my life. Like, I feel like I'm not gonna move on from my grief, but I'm gonna move on with my grief. And somehow the place inside of me that houses grief, whatever that is evolving and enlarging, and it's just making room for that part of me to be there with me always. Like, it's not like I'm ever going to get over it. There's going to be days where, like I said before, that dark cloud is waiting for me, and it's going to need some attention, because it's not going to stay in the past. It's going to come with me, but like I said, that place inside is going to evolve and grow and make space for it. Whereas a year ago, I felt very small and very cramped, and like I felt like all jittery inside because I couldn't make space for this thing in my life. But now, even just a year later, if that space has gotten just a little bit bigger, the grief is a little bit more comfortable in there. And I imagine that in 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, as other losses inevitably come into my life as well, that space will just continue to enlarge and take shape and make room for that part of me to be there.
Yes, what you just said was very profound. I'll say it this way: your pain might not get smaller, but your heart can get bigger.
That's it. That's it.
And one of the things that helps me with, in addition to everything you just said, is I felt that way too. Not only, I don't know if I'm ever going to get over this, to be honest with you, and it's possible some listeners may not, but well, whatever. I'll just say it. To be honest, there are some days I don't want to get over it. Like I don't want to let it go because I don't have to explain why, but I mean, I should say because there's something about being connected to that pain. It's the last thing I have of my loved one that I lost. There's something really sacred and weird about that. Which, by the way, was another piece of evidence for me personally of God, because I was still connected to this pain, and I thought God was connected to that, and I saw Jesus's suffering and thought Jesus probably was connected to that. So there's like this multi-entanglement thing happening. But before I get off in the weeds, yeah, I didn't even want I don't even really want the pain to go away. It didn't feel like I was going to honor, that was honoring of this person who was so important to me. So that's what I've been doing the whole time, is trying to grow the interiority of who I am. And I've just told myself, like, yeah, the pain might not ever get smaller, but the heart can get bigger. And you're absolutely on the healthy path when you're doing that.
So what practices have you found
To make my
helpful?
heart bigger.
Yeah, like to make your heart bigger, to, work with your grief, to live with your grief, because there's a lot, like you said before, like it's not just the loss of a child or the loss of a parent. People have all different losses. I know somebody who listens to the podcast recently lost their house and everything they own in a fire. We have other people who have lost, pets, people who have lost siblings, things like that. Like, what practices have you found helpful to keep yourself from disconnecting completely? Because I feel like I felt that in my own life, like over this last year, like it could be very easy for me because I'm an introvert to begin with. And so I like to be alone. And it can get really lonely if you go deep inside with your grief and things get really dark in there. And so I'm wondering, like, what practices have worked for you to kind of keep yourself engaged with your grief and engaged with your life as you've made your way from that moment?
Yeah, I don't know if anything too novel, but some really important things for me, first of all, is to be thinking about the physicality of it. And so sleep and rest. It's funny, when I was younger, and people would come to see me in my office. First of all, I had an office back then. That was a good time. And secondly, I was a young Bible guy, and we, almost always we'd wind up talking about, or the first thing I'd mention is how, as they're trying to work through their problems, is what Bible verse can I point them to? Now, I almost always start with, tell me about your sleep life. Tell me about your rest. It's so important. So I've paid more attention to that. For me, it's interesting. I really needed to, I was being invited to, lured into writing about it, because that's how I was processing it. It was just so much chaos. And there's something about writing that helps me reorder the chaos in my world. Putting, I don't know what it is, words on a page, on a screen, as it were, and moving those things around. It's like existential Tetris. Like I'm moving them around on the screen, and it's doing something inside of me. So I was already kind of trying to be a writer before this big event happened, but not too long after that, I made the commitment to myself, to the universe, that I am going to do this. I'm going to become an author. Well, in order to do that, this might be a side trail, but I'm still answering your question. In order to do that, I had to get up early, because at the time, not only was I pastoring, we had also started, and by the way, we still run a nonprofit out of Haiti, that takes up a massive amount of my time at times. And at the time, I still had two boys at home, and growing a little church and all the different things that I was involved in, coaching and all the stuff. So I knew I wouldn't be able to write unless I got up early consistently. So I started getting up really early to write. Well, that forced me to go to sleep earlier. And not only that, it forced me to think about things like how I was going to prepare to go to sleep earlier, because one of my problems has always been I can go to bed early, but I may not go right to sleep.
Right.
So I had to reapproach that whole thing. So now I'm reading books about and listening to podcasts about sleeping better. So that now I start turning my lights off earlier in the evening just to prepare myself. I read, this is funny. My wife thinks this is funny. Like I read really hard theological stuff at night, or maybe I'll listen to a podcast, because if I really, really focus, all the other voices go away and it puts me to sleep. It doesn't put me to sleep necessarily because because it's boring. It
Right.
puts me to sleep because I'm trying to figure out
You're
what the
exhausted
freak,
from thinking. Yeah.
right, what Alfred North Whitehead is saying, or
Right.
so it affected how I prepared to go to sleep. It affected the way I ate, because what eating certain foods and drinking certain things was keeping me up later. It's funny how much the commitment to write wound up changing so many of the other things. And anyhow, trying to answer your question, what are ways that I help make my heart grow bigger? Writing was a piece of it, but also in all of that were all these things involved with it. It's funny because sometimes when I say that stuff, depending on who I'm talking to, I obviously don't get that vibe from you, but I get the vibe, actually, people have even said as much to me, like, well, yeah, no, but really, what are the real things? Like, what are the spiritual things? And I've been like, no, wait,
Sleep is
actually,
spiritual. Jesus took
it
naps.
is.
Right?
Absolutely. And
Mm-hmm.
if there is such a thing as the divine entanglement, you know, love is infused within the physicality of who we are. And we already know this is true. I mean, neurologically and emotionally, everything is, you know, constantly in going back and forth between us and other people and us and
Yeah.
love and the world. So it's all interconnected. So actually, it is a very spiritual, it has been a very spiritual practice for me. Taking hikes, like I probably, again, I don't think I would be a Christian, and I'm not even sure I'd be alive if I hadn't had just allowed myself to drive out to the mountains and to get away into the wilderness for a couple of days. I don't know what it is about that, but that's helped me tremendously. Yeah, I've gone through intense seasons over the last 9 years of being very disciplined about my prayer life. But I've also been honest about that, and like it really was super helpful. Brian Zahn's prayer school thing I did a long time ago, and I've adapted and adopted that. And I still come back to that every once in a while. But after I did that daily for about 3 years, and it was really helpful. But after about 3 years, it just seemed like that it the I was changing. It was different, you know.
Sure.
So maybe that's helpful. I mean, there's just been a series of things, just trying to give myself space and grace to be present to the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think space and grace to be present has been a big one for me because I've talked about this with my wife the other day. I said I really feel like this season has taught me the importance of the word no. Because I've always been, more prone to yes. If someone asks me to do something, yes. Somebody
Yeah.
wants me to do something, yes. Want my help? Yes. So I always try to say yes, because again, it comes from that mindset I felt like I had in the church. You always have to be present for everybody else, So I was always the person taking on more and more and more things. Everybody's always amazed, because of how much you can do, and that feeds that ego as well. And so you feel like, good because you can do all these different things. And so, I've always had this struggle with saying yes to too many things. And I've really had that a lot in this season of my life because I've had a lot of people approach me, about they want me to come on their podcasts. I've had invites to be part of like a virtual conference. I've had invites to actually go to different places and do different things. And they're all things that would be great for the career, or great for the goals that you might have or whatever. And it might look great on a resume, whatever it is. But like I said to my wife, I'm like, it might look great in those things, but I feel like it's gonna take up a lot of the space that I'm trying to create in my life to give myself grace and to let myself feel what I feel and do what I got to do. And so I'm really becoming comfortable with just saying no. Like, I really appreciate the offer. I'm really honored, to be thought of, to be part of this thing that you're doing. Like, thank you. And I wish you all the best. But in this season of my life, it's just something I can't take out of my plate. Like, that's all like new language for me, because I never would have thought of that like 2 years ago. I would have jumped on any opportunity that came my way. But I feel like this last year has really taught me the importance of creating space, which allows me to be present in the moments, because I'm realizing too, like how quickly in the blink of an eye, everything can change. Like all the moments that you have, like I'm sure you feel that with your daughter, like it could all be different in a day. And so like if you take on too many things and you miss the moments that you're in, you might not have those moments tomorrow, And so like that's always on my mind as well. It's like, am I allowing myself the space to be present in the moments that I'm in? So creating
Makes me,
space, saying no has been a
yeah.
ritual. It's become a ritual for me.
I think it's great. It makes me think of, the What If project. Like, what if it puts a new spin on that? Now
Yeah.
you're saying, well, what if I don't respond with a yes to all these things,
Yeah.
and I make space? It, all of a sudden, like it seems like it's in alignment with your who you are. You're not trying to force it to become one particular thing. What if it becomes something else? Love is still there, and you'll just evolve and be something else. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, and it's funny, like I even feel like I don't know, like I've been feeling this the last couple of weeks that like I almost like that feeling of not being so overwhelmed with things to do. Like my daughter's been sick this past week, and I've always been somebody in the past that used to draw a lot and like paint and stuff like that. And like we got some paints and we got some sketch stuff, and like I've been doing a lot of drawing and a lot of art. That had I loaded up my plate with all these things, I wouldn't have time to do that. But I feel like that art is opening up a whole nother realm inside of me that's doing a whole lot of other things. And I feel like I like this feeling of freeing up my time a little bit more, And so I feel like, when I look back over this last year, as tragic as it was, that's a really good thing that's come into my life that might not have been there had my father not passed away. So I feel like my father on the other side of the veil, I feel like this is a lesson from him. I feel like he's teaching me even now. I feel like we have this bond that we're communicating, and I feel like we're, he's still teaching me from the other side, whatever that might be, whatever that might look like. But I feel like that's one of the good things that's kind of come out of the ashes, so to speak, that's grown over this last year.
That's cool. That's
Yeah.
very cool.
Well, Jonathan, we're just about out of time, but thank you for taking time for me. Thank you for this book. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your grace. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Matt. It's really fun to reconnect and to talk about the book, and hopefully to help people, and let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. And real quick, where can people go to find you? Anything you want to point people to, invite people to be
Sure.
part of? Yeah.
Well, Indigo, The Color of Grief, can be found at all fine digital retailers. So audio, ebook, physical, audio, I don't know why, Audible, which is Amazon's thing and is the biggest one, is still not out yet. But if you want the audio, go to Spotify and Apple and all those other places. And it will be on Audible. Could be today. Who knows?
There you go. Hey, whenever Amazon decides that,
I
they're
don't
gonna
know.
do what they
Audible's
do.
always been a pain for some reason. But if you want to just connect with me, you can go to jonathanfosteronline.com. You can sign up for my Substack. You can find out about some other books, or maybe you want to write a book. I can help you do that. Any number of things we could do.
You go. I'll put the links in the show notes, and we'll do it again
Thanks.
soon.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Trees are in green, the ocean is gray, sky is a vague blue. Come away, my room is a mess, it could use a hand. My favorite TV shows are capturing. I know, must get it right, must get back in the fight. This can't be a surprise. I think I'll let it slide. I'm sleeping. ready to go. The feeling of thirst, desire to be a rock in my heels. I'm numb as a poison, flows in my veins. Guess I got used to avoiding the pain. I know I must get it right, must get back in the fight. This can't be a surprise. Why I fade into this bitter taste.